This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 152 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stuffgold.
What's up, guys? Glute guy, get that booty popping. Who we got?
Brett Contreras. Yeah, man. Been following this guy for a long, long time.
Finally getting that recognition.
Yeah, man. In terms of glute training, I know we had Buddy Morris on, and of course he's way more than just the glute guy, but that is his kind of claim to fame, and he's one of the best coaches out there in the industry, so it's going to be a great learning experience.
This guy is a scientist. You're going to get from this interview, you're going to understand how deep into research Brett is, how important it is for him to study and then experiment and then share. And we need guys like Brett in the industry to push the industry forward on that scientific research part.
Yeah, he's a talker, so get your notepad ready, guys. There's some great actionable takeaways.
For sure. He is a talker.
For sure. All right, guys, before we get Brett on the show, just a big shout out to everyone subscribing, leaving us 5-star reviews, and sharing our posts on social media.
We love it, guys. Vision Board Podcast, Twitter, Vision Board Pod. Stay connected.
Yeah, for sure, guys. But without further ado, let's get the glute man on. Here is Brett Contreras. Our special guest is Brett Contreras. Brett is known worldwide as an expert in glute training and is a lifelong student of strength training. He's a published author and researcher with his credentials, including a PhD in sports science from AUT University, certified strength and conditioning specialist with a distinction from the National Strength and Conditioning Association, while his work has also been seen in the likes of Men's Health, Bodybuilding.com, Women's Health, Muscle and Fitness, Flex, Men's Fitness, and T Nation. We welcome Brett Contreras. Brett, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Brett, thanks for stopping by the show. You recently visited Australia for the Fitness Expo.
Yep.
I wanted to, could you share some insight on how that trip went for you and maybe leave our fans, give our fans a little bit of how that went for you?
Well, so it was bittersweet because, I just recently spoke for Phylex with my buddy Alan Aragon, and I always say Alan and I are we complement each other so well because he's so smart with you know, nutrition, sports nutrition, basically nutrition for body comp, for like maximizing hypertrophy and fat loss. So, but whereas I know a lot about his stuff and he knows a lot about mine, but I'm more of a biomechanics, you know, the physiology of hypertrophy, sports science, all that stuff. So the two of us make a good team. So we did a 2-day pre-con together. And then we also did, I did 3 talks in the main conference, but it was bittersweet because I went to get on my flight and they're like, we can't let you on the plane. You don't have a visa. And I don't know why, I just didn't think of that. To fly to Australia, you have to have a visa. And, you know, most countries, you just go and show up. Well, we spoke the year before in Australia, but the people who put it on handled all that. Like, they took care of our visas and everything. So, anyway, I had to call up Alan, and I'm like, Alan, they're not letting me on the flight. I feel sick. I felt like puking. I felt so. I was like, what am I going to do? But I ended up getting a flight the next day. And so I had to, you know, I had to do the, it's like a
online form, for me, right?
I'm in Phoenix. So it's a 2 hour, like a, you know, hour and a half flight to LA, then a two, you know, 2 hour layover, and then a 16 hour flight to Sydney. And my, the flight was delayed. So by the time I got to my hotel, I just had to take a real quick shower, get dressed, and then go right into my talk. So it was kind of stressful. Like, you know, I didn't sleep much on the plane, and I had to go right into an all-day pre-con. But I was fine because of all the adrenaline and everything, all the excitement. But yeah, it went great. God, it was such a good, in terms of the information we presented, we worked so hard putting together. We spent two solid months of our lives putting together all the material for it. So I was so excited to present it. And Phylex is just a big, you know, it's just a big event. It's really well put on. Got a lot of really good presenters. So aside from the traveling, and then there was one funny incident where so I stayed at the Novotel. And I said Sydney Harbour, and then people made fun of me because it wasn't Sydney Harbour. It's like whatever, but it was on the harbour, wherever the convention is. And there's three Novotels, but at the end of the, after our pre-con, we stayed and answered questions, and it's like 7:30 p.m. and we're just so drained, and we were like, "Where's our hotel at?" And I go, there, look, you can see Novotel. So we walked to Novotel, and it's the wrong one. So, and my feet were hurting so bad because I had these dress shoes. When I wear them for a few hours, it's no problem, but I had them on the entire day. So my feet, by the time we got to the hotel, they were just killing me. And I go, I don't think this is the right hotel. So we get in there, and the guy's like, no, there's actually three of them in this area. You're at the wrong one. You're staying at this one. And he's like, it's like a 15-minute walk, but you know, and I'm like, oh, can you call us a cab? He's like, there's one waiting right out there. So we took a cab, but he said it's a 15-minute walk, and this cab driver kept making all these turns. And I'm like, okay, he was this Asian cab driver, and he keeps making all these turns. And I'm like, is he, because they do this here in the U.S. too, like cab drivers will scam you.
Yeah.
So like, is he doing this where he's just trying to make like extend the trip? So I was already like, it was like a 15-minute drive, and I look and it's like $28.
Jesus.
So then I give him my credit card, and he types in $36. So I go, hold on, why did you type in $36 when the meter says $28? And he's like, credit card fee. And you know, it's weird because I don't live in Australia. I don't know the rules, like. But I know how it is in the U.S. Like, I know there are cab drivers who try to scam foreigners. So I go, okay, can you show me where it says there's an $8 credit card fee? And then he says, no, it's actually, okay, fine, $28. Wow. Well, then I knew he was scamming me, so I lost it. And I just start yelling. And then Alan's in the back, and he's such a, you know, he's a pleaser. He's non-confrontational. He doesn't know what's going on. So it's just, and I'm like, he's scamming me. So I'm like, so keeps trying to say that you need to pay me, and I keep saying I need to call the cops. What do I dial to call the cops? I'm calling the cops. What do I dial? Because in the States it's 911. I guess in Australia it's 000. So I didn't even know that. So he wouldn't tell me how to call the cops. So I go, okay, if you don't tell me how to call the cops, I'm just going to walk inside the hotel. And anyway, so finally I walked inside the hotel. He followed me, and the concierge, he's like, he didn't pay. And I said, I want to call the cops because this guy's trying to scam me. And then I go, will you get his license plate number? And the guy took off running and bolted out of there. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a crazy story.
That's an interesting thought to your trip.
That was day one. So, and then the whole time, Alan's like, what happened? And then the funniest thing, so Alan texts me. So Alan wanted to get room service, and they close at 8 o'clock. So it was like 7:50. And I go, Alan, while this was all going on, I go, Alan, run upstairs and order your room service. So then he texts me at like 8, and he goes, Brett, where are you? I ran downstairs to look for you. And I thought this was so funny. I felt so bad. I texted him back. I said, on way to jail, knocked the guy out. And then I don't know what? And then I felt so bad because I know going through his head, he's like, well, I'm going to have to do the pre-con on my own on day two. I'm just kidding. I'm in my room. I'm totally kidding. So, yeah, that was an exciting day one. And then the rest went seamless.
How do you and Alan know each other from?
We spoke at the fitness summit together like 10 years. That was last weekend in Kansas City. But that was, I think, like 8 years ago or something like that. And that's when I first met him. But I always had a lot of respect for him. And now he's my that's one of my favorite things in the past decade. You know, I went from being a high school math teacher to leaving that to the fitness industry. And I had a gym and I had all these cool training methods and ideas. And, you know, like Alan's big on flexible dieting. I remember being like 15 years old thinking, well, like, why do the bodybuilders only eat like oats and like whole wheat and, you know, brown rice? And why can't I have a yogurt instead? Or why can't I, like, I was thinking about flexible dieting like when, you know, years ago. So then I stumbled across Alan's work and it all makes sense. You know, it was like, God, I was thinking this the whole time. Like a lot of the myths and misconceptions that he's debunked were things I was thinking of. So anyway, when I was 10 years ago, I didn't have any friends in the field. I didn't have any colleagues that I could jump on the phone and chat with. And now I have tons. And that's the best aspect to this whole thing is the colleagues that I've gained. And I can, you know, I can jump on the phone with Brad Schoenfeld or like my buddy Andrew Vygotsky, and I just discuss high level biomechanics topics all the time. So sometimes you'll read a study and you're like, God, I want to make sense of this, or I want to talk about this to someone. And now I have lots of colleagues in the field.
Brett, recently in an interview, Tristan and I were talking to Buddy Morris, and you were brought up, and he was actually, his sentiment about, you know, your name, the glute guy, he actually was kind of offended. He was like, everyone calls Brett the glute guy. He's so much more than just that. He was coming from a place of like, you know, kindness for like you getting like pigeonholed into that umbrella. You are the glute guy, though, and could you share with us how you got, you know, so indelved down that track?
So the nickname glute guy came from, this was around 10 years ago. No one knew who I was at this time. I was just a conference attendee. I went to a Perform Better summit, and I was talking to a guy named Martin Rooney. He's been in the industry forever. Yeah, training for Warriors. And anyway, I was telling him how I, you know, did a lot of research, like a lot of experiments, I wouldn't call it research. It's more like a bunch of experiments on myself and a few clients, like four different clients. I did a ton of EMG, electromyography experiments.
Yeah.
And I was telling him all about the glutes, and he's like, anyway, at the end of it, he's like, man, this is exciting. You need to call yourself something. Call yourself the glute guy or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. So I ran with it. But yeah, that's a decision that at any point in time, I could change. I could just not call myself that anymore or try to call myself something different. But Buddy Morris, for those of you listeners who don't realize, he's the head strength coach for the Arizona Cardinals, the NFL team. And he lives in Phoenix with me. And he's just such a great guy. He's such a wise, you know, I'm not sure how old he is. He seems like he's like 60 or something, but he's still studying like crazy. God, he's probably in his 50s and he's going to get mad at me for hearing that. But anyway, he studies like crazy and he still is. We'll meet up with a bunch of strength coaches. He'll bring his notebook and he'll be taking notes, and he's as avid of a student as anyone. And he's the top dog. You'd think it'd be the other way around. So I love Buddy, but he says what he means is, I'm so much more than glutes because I study sprinting, jumping, you know, agility, powerlifting. God, I like the hamstrings. I like bodybuilding. I love hypertrophy. I'm a lifter myself, and I'm a personal trainer. So I need to know. I like to learn about pain science. Everything related to sports science interests me, and so Yeah, it does kind of pigeonhole me in one aspect, but on the other hand, you know, it's kind of telling people I am the glute expert in the whole world. There's whatever 6-7 billion people in the world. I am the top dude with glutes. I know that for a fact. I did my PhD on glutes. I've read all the research. I'm now publishing the research. I'm coming up with new exercises, and that's my main focus.
And Brett, could you share with our fans the importance, though, of knowing how to activate the glutes while training, and maybe some common mistakes in the gym of people who are going at it wrong by not activating the glutes?
So this is kind of something that I have what I used to say, 10 years ago when I first started out, which was a more simple explanation. And now I don't believe any of it, but it's funny because I get interviewed for a lot of magazines and I can tell they're frustrated because they want the simple answer. Mm-hmm. Now, I used to be like, oh, we spend most of our lives sitting, and sitting shortens the hip flexors. And you know, then you have reciprocal inhibition of the gluteus maximus. They shut down. And then you have synergistic dominance of the hamstrings. And I'd use all these. So people become quad dominant, and they use their hamstrings for hip extension, and I used to say all this stuff, and now I don't believe any of it. I mean, think about it. If sitting was bad for your hip, first of all, when you sit, the rectus femoris is it's lengthened at the knee, shortened at the hip, so the net length change isn't going to be that crazy. The psoas. Yeah, you're in hip flexion, but you're also in posterior pelvic tilt. So, and a lot of people lean back when they sit. So, but then you go and sleep, and most people sleep in neutral. You don't, you know, sleep is so flexed. You're either lying on your back or your stomach, or it's not like sitting is going to totally shorten your. And even if they did, would that cause inhibition? You know, we don't have that much research on reciprocal inhibition. And so anyway, I used to say sitting's the root of all evil. And then I'm like, when I quit personal training so much, I lessened my personal training load to write more. My glutes still function fine because I'm lifting heavy weight 3 times a week. You know, so I don't think that's the case anymore. What I think, I also don't like the term quad dominant because there's just weak everywhere. Yeah, they might resort to movement strategies where they rely on their quads a lot, but it's just because they have movement naivete or movement ignorance where they don't know that they should lift this way instead of this way. They're unfamiliar with the form we want them to use. So we get them in the gym, they're used to squatting this way, or they're used to doing things this way. And we have to teach them better form, but they're just weak. And think about in everyday life, if you wore EMG, if you wore electrodes all day long hooked up to EMG and you studied your daily life, what you would see is that whenever you stand up from a chair, whenever you climb up a set of stairs, you know, throughout life, you have high quad activation. I mean, you can just put your hand on your quads and feel them when you walk up stairs or when you stand up from a chair. You might activate, 50%, 70% sometimes of MDIC just doing everyday life. Whereas the glutes, they don't get called in really. They don't activate very highly when you stand up from a chair, when you climb stairs, things like that. They really get called into play when you're with movements that you don't do in everyday life too much, or with when you go heavy, like if you squat heavy or do a high step up, whereas people don't climb 6 stairs at a time, or when you sprint, things like that. So most people aren't doing those things in every life, so they get weak, and they, you atrophy and you lose some of the neural coordination and things like that. So with proper strength and conditioning, you improve the neural and the muscular aspect of it. It's neuromuscular strengthening. So you improve the nervous side of things, you improve the muscular, you get a bigger muscle, a stronger muscle, and you use it more. The brain learns how to use, if you focus on the glutes and get them stronger, then you incorporate those into your movements, you use them more. The brain's not stupid. If I have big muscular glutes, and I'm going to pick a heavy box off the ground, I'm going to rely on my glutes. I'm not going to try to use all quads, for example. So why is that important? The glutes are important for, like I just said, it helps you use better form just naturally. So, but still you got to learn, you know, you got to be taught with deadlifts. This is how you deadlift. You don't just, people don't just walk up to the bar and have perfect deadlift form. But the reason why it's important is because the glutes are, like, they can prevent injuries and you know, typical pain and discomforting things like ACL injuries. When you land, if you land in knee valgus, that's, you're going to have a much higher likelihood of tearing an ACL. Just patellofemoral pain. If you're always using quads and you're not using your back muscles, and if you lift in a way that puts a lot more stress on the knees, you have a higher likelihood of developing, you know, patellofemoral pain. So the knees and then the hips, there's some research that shows that if you activate the glutes during hip extension, it kind of has a rearward pull on the head of the femur. So it pulls backwards. So it gives a little bit more room to breathe in the acetabulum. So the femur is not butting up against the front of the hips. And so it can help prevent anterior hip pain. A lot of people get anterior hip pain from squatting and things like that. So glutes can help prevent anterior hip pain. It can help prevent lower back pain in a few different ways. One, the way they situate across the sacroiliac joint, the SI joint, they're well suited for force closure there, for producing force closure. So they can help prevent SI joint pain. They can help prevent just lumbar hyperextension related pain and flexion, like overarching or rounding. Because like I said, if you have strong glutes, you'll tend to use them more, so they can help prevent low back pain and injuries. But the pain science is fascinating. It's not just about pain. Is not just about biomechanics. There's a lot of, they call it the biopsychosocial model. So some pain scientists would get mad at me for what I just said, because they'd say, well, you're just focusing on the biomechanics side of the equation. And it's true. There's a lot more to pain than that. But anecdotally, you talk to most strength coaches and they'll say, yeah, strengthen the glutes, and a lot of these incidences of you know, just nagging pain in the gym tend to go away. And then of course there's the performance aspect of getting strong glutes. They help everything I mentioned earlier: sprinting, jumping, agility, throwing, rotating, cutting side to side, climbing, hiking, powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, strongman, martial arts, all ground sports, they all heavily rely on, the glutes are important for all of those things. So, and of course, then the aesthetics aspect of it, you know, the opposite sex likes nice glutes, you know?
Yeah, for sure. How's the AMG training, how do you put that into one of your clients' training or yourself personally?
So this is, I'm glad you brought this up. So, okay. Because you and I stumble across a lot of research, you know, like, oh, here's a new published study showing that this, you know, when you do lat pull downs, this grip activates more lat than this or something like that, you know, or this, you know, here's a study showing that when they did this exercise, it resulted in more EMG activity than this exercise. And that's important to look at, but research reports averages. So you don't know if that applies to you or not. So one thing when you publish these studies, because I've been involved in I've probably published like maybe, I don't know, probably like 8 different EMG studies, I would say, at this point. And when you look at the data, you'll see, like Brad Schoenfeld and I published a study on rear delts. And we looked at, you know, posterior deltoids on reverse pec deck using either a pronated or a neutral grip. And on average, the neutral grip was better for activating the rear delts, but a couple subjects got higher using the pronated grip. And I can tell you, with all my clients, I will actually hook up electrodes to their glutes and other muscles, like vastus lateralis, biceps femoris, and upper and lower gluteus maximus. I've even done adductor longus, erector, you know, I've done other muscles too, but I'll do upper gluteus maximus and lower gluteus maximus, and I'll run them through 30 different exercises. And, you know, what I can tell you is that people are just different, you know? In fact, I just collected data for another two or three studies that I'm going to publish here at ASU. I collaborated with a professor there, and it's just fascinating to me because, people are different. You know, people activate their muscles uniquely. They move differently. They also, when you go heavy or when you go to failure, you see different movement strategies and neuromuscular strategies. So you can't just assume that you apply to the masses. So that's what benefits me, is that I have my own lab. It's actually my garage in my house. I have a 4-car garage.
Yeah.
So I'm not a professor. I've published 44 studies now for the love of the field. I don't get any, like, if you're a professor, your career, you're better, you know, it's like publish or perish. You have to be publishing. But I just do it because I love it. It doesn't earn me more money or anything like that. So I use the equipment out of my garage gym. I call it my glute lab, but I have a force plate. I have ultrasound. I have EMG. So I'll actually EMG my clients, and it makes such a big difference because I can say to my client, Aaron, oh my God, you respond so well to lateral band work. Like I give you band seated hip abductions, and your glute activation is at 70% MVIC for every rep. And you could do band seated hip abductions every day. And I can show you her before and after pictures. They're amazing. She went on to crush it in her bikini competitions and win her pro card. And then another client, Devin, that I had, doesn't respond well at all to the lateral band stuff, like, you know, mini bands around her knees and stuff. She gets like no glute activity with those, but she gets a lot out of hip thrusts and squats. So I have her go heavy. And then another client of mine gets, you know, super high, like the heavier hip thrust she does, the higher her glute activity. But that same girl, Erin, that I talked about, she tops out with hip thrust at 50% of one rep max, meaning she doesn't get higher glute activation when she goes heavier. My client, Sammy, she gets higher glute activation when she does goblet squats with 50 pound, so like what's that, like 20, 25 kg, goblet squats, doing 225 pound squats. So that's like 100 kg squats. So I have her do goblet squats and not heavy squats for glute, to build her glutes. Same with kettlebell deadlifts versus conventional deadlifts. I have really heavy kettlebells. I have a 48 kg and I have a 97 or a night. What is it? 203 pounders. So I don't know what that ends up being with the kilograms, but, I have really heavy kettlebells. Some of them get way higher glute activation from deadlifting kettlebells than barbells. And it's not the same for everyone. So what I do is then individualize their training according to what their EMG profiles say. And it makes a ton of difference. I mean, because you can look at it with, like, Erin. I had her doing band seated hip abductions and lateral band work like 6 times a week. And she went off on her own. She quit doing heavy barbell stuff and just was doing band stuff like crazy. She invented her own little exercise and her progress was amazing. Whereas with Sammy, I just had her go heavy because she got way higher activation when she goes heavy, and she only trained glutes twice a week. But I individualize the program according to what I see, and then it makes a world of difference. The problem is you can't go, there's no one offers that commercially right now. You can't just go show up and be like, I want to do an EMG case study and do 30 exercises and learn what works best for me. So unless you're my client in real life, then you won't be able to take advantage of that. And so then I just tell people, pay close attention, because when I ask them, you know, what do you feel more? The problem is most people don't ever ask themselves these questions. They don't ever go and tinker with things. They don't ever go to the gym and say, I'm going to sit there with lat pull downs and try all these different ways and try to see what I feel working my lats the most. Or I'm going to go do these, you know, hip thrusts with all these different stances and see what works my glutes the best, what I feel my glutes working the best. So that's when I train people. And when I do these seminars, when I work with people, I try to help them discover their best stance, width, and form that works for them.
Brett, it's very evident that you're a student of the game. with everything going on in your life, with your brand steadily increasing and, you know, your name steadily growing worldwide, do you find it difficult to manage the time between your brand, social media, your research? And if so, could you share some insights or advice on your on how you're able to disperse that energy towards each project?
Absolutely. And so, and you know, times change. So when I started out 10 years ago, it was all about blogging. I blogged 3 to 4 times a week. I did that for like 7 years, and that's how I got popular. And I did mostly blogging and YouTube and Facebook. And then, you know, you just migrate over time, like according to what works and what doesn't. So lately, I can't stand Facebook algorithms, you know? I hate it. So I don't want a Facebook anymore. I know it's important. I think I have 130,000 followers on my Facebook fitness page. And they changed everything up to where it's like, you know, I'm surprised I don't see like articles about what scummy people they are, like Facebook is. Because for scientists, they screwed us. You know what gets the all these shares is the marketers who promote pseudoscience. You know, I go on Facebook, I see some sponsored posts, and it's like, oh, look at this detox thing, and it has 2 million views, and I'm like, cool. I used to be able to write something to say this dude's scamming everyone, this does not work. Here's a study showing blah blah blah, and then my thing would go viral, and I could battle pseudoscience because I could rely on what the people want. And Facebook is just a money generating, you know, it used to be like before all the sponsored ads and everything, it was just like it was about what went viral by the according to the people. So I could battle pseudoscience, and a scientist like me who's in it for the right reasons could deal with these people. And it was like the you know, things sorted themselves out. And so my thing could go viral, and I could, you know, but now I'll do the same thing, and I'll get like, you know, I have 130,000 followers, and I'll get 12 likes, and one will be from like my mom or something, you know. So I'm like, okay, they want me to sponsor this, but yeah. Mine's not generating any income for me. I was just doing it from the good of science. I'm not making revenue, so I just... And it'll be, I looked into it once and I'm like, so I've never sponsored anything because I looked into it. And I'm like, well, I have to pay like $400 just to get a third of the reach that I used to on my own on every post. No way. So anyway, some people still love Facebook and they do the sponsored ads. I just saw that it wasn't, you know, I don't like that. I don't want to have to sponsor every ad. So I've shifted away from Facebook. I've actually shifted away from blogging. You know, back 10 years ago, we used to communicate by blog comments. Yeah. Now, no, not many people comment on blogs. They comment on the social media venue that they saw it on. So if they saw the link on Facebook, they comment on the Facebook, or on Instagram, they'll comment there, not on the blog, or on Twitter, not on the blog itself. So Twitter is interesting. I love Twitter because I follow a bunch of researchers on there, but I don't think it gets, you don't get much traffic, but I've embraced Instagram lately, and that's been my main vehicle. I think I have 152 or 3,000 followers right now on Instagram. But the Instagram's interesting because you can't, you know, to repost, you have to download a separate app, so you don't get as many shares, and you can't link things, but it's at least fair. Like, you know, there are the algorithms preventing you from. And I'm sure they will because Facebook owns them. So lately, a lot of my time is taken up from Instagram. I spend a lot of time on that. I use my storyboard, and I try to post a couple, like 3 things a day on Instagram. That's been my main thing. But then with projects, like I have different, you know, I have my research review. I have my Strong by Brett. I have these different things that I do. And then I try to publish research. So, you know, that takes up time. And then I also speak. And that takes time. So every day I like my day to not be so booked from like I'm busy from 8 a.m. until, you know, 10 p.m. and then I collapse. I like to have some downtime. When you're a scientist, you like to have time to read journal articles. And you also, when you're a creative type, you know, I fancy myself as a scientist, but my contribution in this industry has been the exercises I've come up with. you know, hip thrusts and tons of different glute exercises that I've introduced to the community, but also my thoughts about program design and creating new programs and creating new, you know, seeing things in a different way and being able to convey them. I feel like your creativity is inversely proportional to your, directly proportional to your downtime. So inversely proportional to how busy you are. So like when I was doing my PhD, I didn't come up with many new things because I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to stay afloat. I'm trying to do my PhD and blog a couple times. And then when I finished my PhD and it's like, oh my God, I can breathe again. I started thinking of all these new cool things and I had downtime. That's when you think of new things. So if you're always so busy, you're not going to, you know, being too busy might be preventing you from making that wise connection with something scientific or even something with your business. And it might be stressing you out to the point that it's hindering you. So I know that now. So I try to always, my workouts sometimes I like to be in my gym. So sometimes I'll work out for 2.5 hours and take long rest times just because I love being in there. It's my sanctuary. If someone invites me to do something, I try to say yes, because left to my own devices, I would just be a research hermit and never come out of my cave, and then I turn crazy, you know? So I try to make sure I prioritize my, you know, or at least not prioritize, but I try and have a social life. I try and, because that keeps you sane. That keeps you, and going out and speaking forces me to go to new places, meet new people, see the world differently. So, yeah, it's tough. And I struggle with it because I'm competitive and I like to, you know, I want to see my social media grow. I want to make a bigger impact, but I also don't want to do so at the expense of selling out my integrity or out of not being a good friend and family member and so on.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Brett, have you kept the amount of people that you are training? Because it just seems that you are doing a lot of research, a lot of presentations. How are you managing that kind of one-on-one and online space?
Right. So, no, I'm not training. I'm only training like 4 people right now. I don't know how I used to do it. I know how I used to train 8 hours a day. And I know some trainers who train 12 hours a day. I don't know how the heck they do it, because lately – well, a lot of my training sessions last like 1.5 to 2 hours, but you know, I train people for 2 hours and then I'll go to ASU and conduct research for 3 hours and I come home, I'm wiped out. So what I realize now is that when I used to train 8 hours a day, you'd have a few people a day who you kind of screwed over. Well, I can't say not every trainer is like that. Like I have a buddy, my buddy Jem is a trainer in Oregon. He can somehow be high energy all day long. Like he doesn't, you know, I'm not that guy. I have lulls in the day where I'm tired, but I always had a couple of clients where you'd be like, God, I was low energy for that person. You want to be amped up. When I only train one client a day, I'm awesome for them, you know, but then it's, I'm drained because I expend so much, you know, the same thing when I go present, I'm exhausted afterwards. I expend so much energy, so much mental energy, but I also only have like, I think like 4 or 5 online clients. I haven't taken on a new online client in ages because to do that right, it's really hard to do that. I know I could start doing that and quickly have 100 clients, no problem, but would I be happier? And that's always what I try to ask myself. Yes, this would make me more money. Would it make me happier? I don't ever want to dread my life. And you know how online training can be, like you wake up and you've got 40 emails and you spend the whole day trying to clear your email inbox. And and you're always stressed knowing that you know you're checking your phone in the middle of a podcast or something, or like, and you see 50 new emails coming in, you're like, oh God, it just stresses you out. So I don't do it. So yeah, I try to get a good balance. But one thing I've noticed, if you don't train people, like I learn a lot from my seminars because I'll work with 20 people. Well, heck, I was just at Phylex and also at the fitness summit last weekend, and I have them raise their hand. I have them doing all these exercises. I'll say, raise your hand if you feel this one more. So by this point in time, I can tell you 1/3 of people feel this more than this. You know, 2 out of 10 will like this more than this, and I'm very confident. But I learn a lot at these seminars. It's almost like having 20 new clients, you know, because it's like having 20 first sessions, because I run them through squat variations, deadlift variations, hip thrust, back extensions, lateral band work, single leg work. If you're just a researcher and you have no clients and you don't actually train people and lift weights yourself, and I have workout partners too, and I'm always helping them. But if you go that route, then you become too esoteric. You're too, you know, pie in the sky. You're not grounded in reality. So I will always train people, always. Even when I was in New Zealand, I had a few clients because you have to stay grounded in the practical stuff. So, yeah, I do. I try to have a good balance of everything. But, yeah, it is tough.
And in regards to business and branding, to all of the coaches listening to this at home, could you give some advice or some lessons maybe on business that you recently learned that you feel could be very valuable in growing a brand?
Absolutely. So I think one thing people need to ask themselves is, are you trying to make money? Are you trying to make an impact? Are you trying to be taken seriously? Is it a blend of all three of those? Because like me, it's a blend, but there's one researcher who in the field who his stuff's been called into question lately, and it's devastating to me because I know this person, and he'd be my best friend if it weren't for the fact that his data is just too good to be true. And so now everyone turned against this person, and I just that bothers me so bad because I think of myself. You know, to me, the data is, the research is pure. It's like we humans will screw it up with our interpretation, but the data is pure. You know, I could never inject false data into the literature. I'd rather, if someone said, you got to publish this false study or kill yourself, I'd rather kill myself. I just couldn't do it. But anyway, if you were to say, Brett, I always like to say everyone has a price. Well, if you were to say, Brett, I'll give you $10 billion, you'll be one of the richest men in the world, but you'll have to knowingly publish false data and your friends will know about it, you know, I wouldn't do it because the things that make me happy in life are being able to call the colleagues that I told you about earlier, being able to present with Alan. If I ever did anything shady as a scientist, they'd all turn their backs on me, and they should, because science scientists should never support fraudulent people, even if they're your friends. So they would turn on me, and I wouldn't have their respect. I wouldn't be able to, you know, what I like is that we have these conferences every once in a while. I get to go present with them and you know, mix it up with them, and I love that. So I think starting out, most people just focus on the money because it's hard to make it in this field. It's a competitive field. So some people cut corners and do shady things, and then cool, you made more money. But I think a lot of people also wish they could be in my shoes where they could present at these conferences where they were, you know, you see these lists come out, you know, the greatest top 100 most influential people in the fitness industry. They would love to be on that list, you know, and send it to their family, send it to their mom and dad and go, check it out, I made this list. I think deep down, everyone kind of wants the notoriety, but they also want the income. But once you make, I think the research on happiness and income at like 70 grand a year, it tops out. So I don't know what that converts to for Australian dollars, but Like it, my point is, it's not like the more money you make, the happier you are. It can actually become to where it's more stressful. So I always try to keep in mind, what is my main goal? Because there are some things I could do right now. If I start taking on online clients, I think I could, I could charge $600 a month and take on 100 people, that's 720 grand a year. And I could have 100 clients in the next 2 weeks. And you can go, well, why the hell wouldn't you do that, Brett? That's going to, you know, make you so much more income. Because I don't care that much about the money. When you're a scientist, I'm indoors studying. Cool. I like money. I'm not afraid of it. But if it's going to make me miserable and hate my life, so what the hell would I do if I had 100 clients right now online? My whole life would change. I'd be so busy answering these people and trying to be a good coach that that would be way too stressful. I'd be miserable. So, you know, I know there are things with social media that I could do that would gain me a lot more followers quickly, but I don't want to go there. I don't just, you know, I publish journal articles. I could make an emotional post on Facebook and it would get way more likes than something that took me 6 months to do in the research. But the right people see that. I influence the influencers. I like that my supervisor for my PhD, John Cronin, he is he consults with a lot of Olympic teams, Olympic strength coaches around the world. No matter where he goes, they'll say, Brett, I was consulting with Malaysia and their Olympic coaches, and they're like, yeah, we love Brett Contreras. They all love your stuff. When I went to the coaches conference here, both the NSCA and the CSCCA conferences, I meet the strength coaches and they're like, big fan of your work, Brett, you've influenced me. And I love that, you know, I'll be like, so you got this guy, you got LeBron James doing frog pumps, and yep, cracks me up to think of him doing my stuff. So I like that. So I think a lot of people don't know what they want. What their ultimate goal is, they might focus on this. So cool, you get the money, and then you've sold out, and then you have no respect. That's no way, not a good strategy. So I think you got to know what your ultimate goal is. And then there are other people who don't care about the respect. They don't care if they have a name. They just want money. So you might have a different strategy. The route that's going to make you the most money is different than the route that's going to get you the most respect, versus the route that's going to have you make the greatest impact. So you got to consider all those things. And then the second piece of advice I have is know your strengths and weaknesses. So me, I'm people think that I'm a good writer because I had a popular blog, but some of my articles have been well written. Sometimes I'll look back to an article and I'm like, wow, that's really good. Yeah, it's good because it took me 6 weeks to write. I read over it 42 times and had to edit it over and over and over. Time-wise, it was a bear. And I'm not a good writer. I can't just sit down. All my friends are way better, not just better writers, they're more efficient. They can write something quickly. I sit down and I'm like, how do I start this out? What do I, you know, and it just doesn't flow well for me. And I have to edit and edit and edit to make something good. So but as you can tell from me gabbing away here, I'm a good talker. And so I do more podcasts. I do podcasts. I do seminars. I love speaking. I'm doing more things that involve talking instead of writing lately because that better matches my strengths.
Yeah.
So you always want to, I say this and it sounds vulgar, but you want a bigger package. You want to, and when I say your package, what I mean is the things that contribute to your being successful. So there are things that, like, if I had a physique of a Greek god, then that would help my popularity. I could just post selfies and gain all these followers. If I was an amazing speaker, that's going to gain me more followers. If I was a world-class powerlifter, well, I have a decent physique, but I'm never going to look like the guys on the cover of Men's Health, or I'm never going to compete in bodybuilding. I'm strong at some lifts, but I'll never be a great powerlifter. But I do work my butt off. You can see on my Instagram. I'm training 5 days a week, hard as hell. But that Does that help my popular? Yes. Does that make me hugely successful and popular? No, it doesn't. What makes me popular is my information, my science. But I work hard on all avenues. I try to be a better speaker. I try to be a better writer. I try to, you know, you have to be, these days you have to be like jack of all trades almost. It's like, you know, I feel like a caveman with technology, but it's funny because we spend a lot of our days on the computer and it doesn't come easy for me. You have to know how to do social media and make, edit your videos and memes and stuff, because most of us can't afford all these assistants to do everything for us, you know? And so all these things contribute to your success and your popularity and your income. And you have to know, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Try to work on bringing up your weaknesses, but ultimately that largely determines, you know, I have some friends that are good at this and not so good at this. If they were to try to be speakers, they would suck. You know, whereas other people, if they were trying to be writers, they would suck. But they've done a good job of knowing what they're good at, and that's what determines, you know, how they make their money. So if you're a good speaker, you can do seminars, you can do boot camps, you can train people in real life. But if you're, you know, if you're a good writer, you can make ebooks and you can write, you know, write blog a lot and write ebooks and make digital products like, you know, information products. So I think most people don't really know what they're good at and what they're not so good at, and therefore they can't, you know, if you're, the things you're really not good at, you should reach out and try to delegate those to other people.
All right, Brett, we've come to the personality round of the interview. Johnny's got the first question.
All right, Brett Contreras, for our listeners at home who are struggling with some adversity, could you leave them with some advice on overcoming that?
I can relate to that, but I will tell you that things are never going to be perfect. Like, I started my blog, and I had the ugliest blog ever, but I started it. I made my own design. I started a podcast back in the day. I only did like five episodes, but they were awesome. The Brett Contreras podcast, they were awesome, but I don't know what I'm doing. I've never known what I'm doing. I started a research review. We had the ugliest logo, but people liked it because, you know, and we improved upon it. So don't wait till things are perfect. Just start doing it and you'll get better at it. But the fear can just immobilize you. So you just got to jump in, you know, jump in and get better over time.
All right, Brett, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites, only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
Oh my God. This, God, you throw this at me. I know number one would be The Rock, just FYI, just posted himself doing hip thrusts 2 days ago on Instagram. I was super excited about that. But The Rock would be one of them. I think I'd want Dana White there of the UFC.
Yeah.
Who else? Oh, Arnold for sure. Arnold. Maybe Richard Feynman, the scientist that died a while back, this physicist, and then Mel Sipp. Mel Sipp was a sports scientist that died in his 50s. And he was the man. So was that 5?
I think one more.
Yeah. I think that was 5.
Oh, it's 5. All right. Yeah. Everyone, get following Brett online. He's brettcontreras.com. Facebook, he's at Brett Contreras Fitness. Twitter, at Brett Contreras. Instagram and YouTube, at Brett Contreras 1. Brett, my man, thanks so much for entertaining and educating us this morning. Really appreciate you stopping by the show.
Yeah, Brett, man. Keep pushing the bar, raising the bar, and keep pushing our industry to the next level, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me. And
Johnny, Brett Contreras.
I felt like I was in college,
you know, listening to a professor. Yeah. Forget the glue guy. I'm just going to call him the professor.
Yeah, he loves to talk, this man.
Yeah, but it's an attribute.
Interesting stuff.
That's
though.
It, man. Yeah, it's an attribute to his work. It's like he, you know, as we evolve with the show and as the industry keeps pushing forward, like we said in the beginning, you know, we need more guys like Brett to be vocal about it. I think in the past our industry was held back, even recently, bro. And we talk about this off record about how our industry has evolved online in regards to, you have these pseudo coaches online with the care of humans in their hands, and they have zero credentials. They just have a big following. And I think now the big hitters, the figureheads like your Brett Contreras is, are speaking up about that, yeah. I think that's really important.
I think it's important. I've heard Joe DeFranco kind of speaking a little bit more about that as well. And I think we do need kind of the industry leaders, guys like Joe and Brett and Lane and a lot of the guys that we have out, Kelly. If they start actually make, because it's like we have spoken about, it is about making a better industry. And I think if, I know a lot of these Instagram coaches will get a lot out of actually learning how to do shit properly. And these are the guys you need to go to.
For sure, man. And it's like, we had a conversation a year and a half ago with, you know, these some of these figureheads we speak to. And a year and a half ago, the mindset was, you know what, I'm just going to worry about my own. And then a year and a half later, these Instagram coaches haven't gone anywhere. And now it's like we talk to the same guys a year and a half later, and they're like, dude, this is bullshit. We need to educate the public. We need to put, you know, customer client care at the top of the pecking order rather than a big social media following.
Yeah.
And guys like Brett with his research and what he's doing to the game. And, you know, it's just going to be more and more the expert-oriented wellness space rather than the are you verified at Instagram oriented space for the fitness industry.
Yeah, I think they're creating a standard, especially for coaches. Like, I think if they can create that standard for coaches, the standard of coaching across the world in the industry will be a lot better.
Yeah, man. And this is a chat you and I could go on and on, so I don't want to ramble, but it's very important, though, that you're right. There needs to be a standard.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, next on the show, we've got Drew Manning, the fit to fat to fit man. So it's an interesting story. He's been in these clients' shoes before, so I really think you should check it out.
100%. He's another one of these guys that I had to research and study him and do my due diligence before we had him on. But, you know, having spoken and getting to share this, man, I'm definitely following him now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. So thank you for listening to the show. Please, if you really enjoyed that show, please, you know, share it with your friends on your emails or your social medias. It'll be great. That's how we can grow and we can keep bringing you some great guests.
So. Yeah, guys, share the Brett Contreras episode. Share this one. Just go to your SoundCloud or your iTunes. Press the arrow. Press copy and just put it out on a, you know, get it to as many people as possible because this fitness space, we take it very seriously and we really need this message to be portrayed across as many platforms as possible. So we appreciate you for doing that.
For sure. Johnny, I'll check you on Wednesday, my man.
TK, be good.
Peace.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.